Our hearts and minds are with all who are mourning the recent shooting in Boulder, Colorado.
May support of every kind come swiftly to those who grieve.
Typical June Gemini, and with me is my co-host, Alice Alistair.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Alice, how are you?
I am doing decent. How are you?
Good. I am not half bad. Not half bad. One twin is feeling it, the other twin is maybe not, but it don't always be that way, but sometimes it do. Last week, we sort of gave our listeners an opportunity to get to know us and a little bit about the two of us, some of our history, and how we came to know astrology and be, you know, I don't know, interested in doing this crazy, weird endeavor that we've started here. So, just to sort of revisit, we each talked about our sun sign, our moon sign, and our ascendant sign, which are known sort of as your big three, or what did you call it? The primal triad.
Ooh.
Primal triad, yes. I love that. It sounds so cool. So I am a Gemini sun. Most people are aware of their sun sign. It is the most commonly discussed one. It is the one that, you know, everybody has at one time probably seen a horoscope related to their sun sign. So I am a Gemini sun. I have a Capricorn moon, and I have a Scorpio ascendant sign. Give us a brief description, if you would be so kind, about why the sun, the moon, and your ascendant sign tend to be the ones that most people who are familiar with them, they focus on the most.
Absolutely. A lot of this is coming from sheer perception, where it's like the sun and the moon are such obvious presences in the sky, even to the point that, I mean, disclaimer, don't look directly into the sun. if you, like, are able to gauge approximately, like, how big the disk of the sun is, maybe on a hazy day, and you can kind of see it back there, compared with a full moon, they're almost exactly the same size from our perspective. And so the two major lights of the sky are exactly that for us and how we're perceiving them. That's pretty intuitive, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And then the rising sign is just, you know, it's kind of following the movement of the sky across the eastern horizon. And so it's the sign that is fresh at any given moment.
And your ascendant sign is can basically only be found if you know the exact time that you were born.
Yeah, absolutely. The ascendant is, like, the most personal part of your particular chart, because it does change so quickly, and having that exact time of birth is what gives you that specific information. So it is one of the things that makes you most uniquely yourself, astrologically speaking.
Just so our listeners are aware, this is actually going to be a two-parter. Our original intent had been to make this one big heaping helping of information, but it's just so complex and so complicated to try and cover all the different elements of a birth chart and astrology that we've just decided to make it a little bit more easily digestible for all of us, and we're going to break this into two parts. However, we're not going to make you wait a whole week in between each episode. We're going to release these back to back, so you may listen at your leisure. And then after that, I do believe we're getting into our Aries series. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed. It's almost time.
I'm so excited to talk about Aries. I do know a few Aries. I have some Aries, some Rams in my life. And I'm quite fond of them, so.
I discovered that both of my students today are Aries, so that was a fun discovery.
Yeah, very synchronistic, if you will.
Indeed.
Yes. So without further ado, let us get into some of the elements of astrology.
With a lot of what we're going to be talking about initially, since we mentioned in the previous episode, there are a lot of different ways you can use astrology, and not all of them are so psychological. This chunk is going to be, at least this go-round, really speaking to the nuts and bolts of the psychological aspects of astrology and the bits and pieces of your birth chart.
Right. So this is when we talk about your birth chart, this is what all of those, like, funny-ass memes about boys calling and asking their moms what exactly time they were born, and you know, mom says, no, you're not dating her. This is, you're talking about needing your birth date, the exact time that you were born, and the location. And am I missing anything else? That's it, right?
Yep, that's it.
Yeah, and you talked about how there are apps available, or you can obviously just Google it and plug it into probably any number of websites that will generate your birth chart for you based on that information, right?
Yeah, there's, I'm only very connected with one site because I found the site at the beginning that gave me a comprehensive and reliable way to look up charts. And for me, I like the circle charts. Mm-hmm. I say that because a lot of people will show me like screenshots of their chart and stuff like that, where there's no circle. It's just a list of where each planet is and what like sign each of the houses begins on in their charts. And I still don't know what the heck site that is that does that, but anyhow, that is to say, I recommend using astro.com, but that's not the only one out there. I also want to throw out there just a little caveat and word of caution about things like CoStar and maybe other apps that don't necessarily give you the full spectrum of information that's available on like a circle chart. To the beginner, that might be information overload, but eventually, if you don't have something that's showing you, like, the exact degree that each planet is, like, what house it's in, all of the things that we're about to talk about,
sure,
you might be missing some important stuff.
And part of that I just want to mention, mostly for my own clarity, but it really helps visually, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but when you're looking at one of the circle charts, it really helps visually to be able to see what your, like, planets are in relation to one another, like, because there is such a thing as something being, like, in opposition to, which would be, like, directly across from, right?
Or, exactly. Or 180 degrees.
Right. Or, you know, what is it, like, trine?
Mm-hmm.
Which would be, like, visually it's kind of in a triangle angle. Like, this is, for somebody who's visual, such as myself, because I'm right there with you, looking at just a list of information, you might as well hand me an Excel spreadsheet because that's how freaking dry. That is a Kentucky Fried Chicken biscuit of information.
Okay, that's validating to hear. I mean, I feel like that does the same thing to my brain, looking at just that stuff. But at the same time, some people I've heard, you know, they'll say, like, looking at the circle chart does the same thing for them, or, right. You know, the opposite thing, but
it's just like
blows shit up even more.
A right brain, left brain thing, I'm sure.
Yeah, maybe. Whatever it is, like, there's no single right way about, you know, interpreting this information or interacting with it, but, you know, there are different ways, and it's worth checking them out.
Yeah. Okay, so we know what a birth chart is. We know that there are different ways of looking at one. Let's talk a little bit about what exactly is contained in a birth chart, and it's a lot, but I'm putting a little disclaimer in here. There's a chance that some of this stuff will be about puddle deep information-wise, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're just taking a quick little like sponge meander. Bath of information.
Yes, I like yours better. A sponge bath, yes. Okay, so walk us through it.
Okay, so the big parts are the planets themselves, the signs, the houses, and the aspects. So planets, signs, houses, and aspects give you basically the whole of a birth chart.
Okay. And so, of course, when we say planets, we are including Pluto. And, yes, of course.
And some of the asteroids, if you want to.
Yes, I was going to mention that, too. We talked a little bit the last time about how some, like, astrology sites or whatever, when they build your birth chart, they will take into account asteroids. And I was looking at mine not too long ago, and it had mentioned, like, nodes, which are obviously not planets, right?
Yeah, no, the nodes are interesting because they're a mathematical point in which the orbits of a particular space body intersects with some other thing. I can't remember if it's the ecliptic or another orbital axis, but it's that intersection point that creates a node. And so people will look to those for info too.
Interesting. It's almost like if you were doing a palm reading, but of the solar system.
Wow. Yeah.
Like every little line and point and intersection has meaning on your palm, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great comparison.
Yeah. So back to planets. Every planet influences something, or does it influence something, or does it mean something else?
I'll always err toward the side of saying means and relates and stuff like that, just because, like we said in last episode, a lot of people get their panties in a bunch, and sometimes rightly so, for people saying that the planets influence or cause specifically. But at the same time, like we were even just talking about, things do be influencing things, like, so, anyhow, with sure. The planets, each of the planets can be thought of, especially in this psychological way, of representing certain parts of our mind, certain psychological urges or needs. I'll leave that at that for the moment. Like, does that kind of make sense, or is that already, like...
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And there's something in there about how, just for clarity's sake, the moon and the sun are also considered planets, but, like, in a strictly astrological sense. We're not talking about, like, a scientific definition or, like, a technical definition.
Exactly. And a part of that comes from the old meaning of what planet meant, which was essentially a wandering star. So in contrast to, like, the stars way out there, which aren't moving very fast, you've got these bodies like the moon and the sun and then all the other planets in our solar system, especially the ones observable by the naked eye, moving much faster than any of those stars. So wandering star is what I think the Greeks, they might have had that particular etymological origin with that.
Okay.
But yeah, so the sun and the moon, for all astrological intents and purposes, get to join the planetary family.
Okay. So do you want to go through what each planet, what did you tell me to call it?
Oh.
Not its influence, its relation, how it relates to us.
Sure. Starting with the sun, and I'm already going to detour for a second and say that all of the planets relate to a specific sign, too. So I'm going to try to integrate a little bit of what the planet just means kind of by itself, but we kind of also have to bring in the flavor of the sign that's associated with each planet, because
sure.
That can, you know, flesh out the picture in useful ways.
And as we've already talked about and will continue to talk about, everything is in this particular realm of, you know, discussion is interconnected with everything else. So makes sense.
Yeah. So the sun. The sun can be thought of much in the same way that we think about it as it relates to us here on Earth, and
I don't want to interrupt you, but I think it would be kind of cool, just because I don't have these all memorized, and I don't have like a cheat sheet or anything in front of me right this minute to tell me what sign is associated with which planet.
Yes, absolutely.
So when you get done telling me what each planet is associated with, then I will guess what sign.
Ah!
there are a couple that I know for sure, but there must be multiple signs that are associated with planets, right?
Yeah.
Since
yep.
There are 12 signs and only... Well... Shit. This is going to be interesting.
Oh, goodness. Yep, this is already its own little rabbit hole. But this is good. This is good. So you want to just go down the whole thing and try to guess
yes.
them all at the end? All right. I will do my best to throw you some subtle bones here along the way, but also
okay.
Let's see what happens. So the sun. The sun in a chart is like the sun in our solar system. It is the most powerful force in that it holds everything else together. Everything else revolves around it. And at least for us lucky folks here on Earth, we get the benefit of the sun's life-giving powers, because all of life as we know it on this planet depends upon the sun's radiance. One of the coolest things I ever like read was in a biology text talking about the cycle of energy as it is transformed here on the planet from the sun's radiation coming here and it, you know, interacting with the life forms, like the plants and us eating the plants and everything else that eats plants and us eating those things too, and so on and so forth, and warming, invigorating, and organizing battery. That is like the furnace of any person's chart. Yeah, I mean, that kind of gets us thinking about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I think that was great.
All right, so that's the sun. The moon is basically associated with our abilities to kind of flow and respond and change. And so a lot of people have made the connection between the moon and emotion and mood and that sort of stuff. bringing in the sign that it's associated with makes things a little bit, like, it fleshes things out significantly, and so without saying it, I'm going to say it, and it's going to be hard to, you know, keep that one a secret. But the moon is mostly interpreted as our relationship to home, security, feelings of being nurtured and nurturing, all of those sorts of things.
Okay.
So it's like on the sun side of things, you've got vitalizing energy. On the moon side of things, you've kind of got nourishing energy and protection.
Okay. All right. So we're already kind of just in the first two. We are talking about the two most popular planets that people who know about their birth chart identify as, technically, yes, right? Yes. I mean, when we say, you know, that my sun sign is Gemini, but I have Capricorn moon and Scorpio ascendant, then, you know, that's how people are who know anything about the zodiac and what that all means will identify me going forward.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes astrologers will call that the primal triad or the big three. And a part of that is just like between, like among all of the wandering stars that we are aware of, the sun and the moon are just so big and dramatic and noticeable that a part of their working their way into that sort of triforce of meaning is just the observed fact of them being there and doing the things that they do that we can perceive.
Right, right. We see them all the time.
Exactly. And when we don't see them, we notice that.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So, moving on. My favorite planet.
Yes. Mercury. Mercury is primarily associated with thought, communication, all of the things that are related to those two things. So, words and non-linguistic signs and symbols, essentially. So everything from like sign language to communication through music, teaching and learning, all that kind of stuff is associated with Mercury.
Sounds wonderful.
Right?
Sounds like a charming place.
yes. Yes. Then we move on to Mars. Mars is interesting because the keyword that I thought of first as being most neutral in its association with Mars is just kind of our ability to assert ourselves. I want something to be a certain way, and I've got to take a step to get it done. So Mars is like that part of our mind that gives us the oomph to assert.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the will to act.
Mm-hmm. Or to resist, as the case may be.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. Touché. That was good.
I will also say, just as a caveat, sometimes, a lot of times in the psychological, astrological literature and sites that, like, you'll stumble across just Googling things, will associate a degree of sexuality with Mars, and Mars and Venus kind of both get identified as two different flavors of or two different dimensions of sexual everything. But personally, I think there's sexuality in the whole chart, in all of the planets, and in all of the signs. It's not limited to just those things.
That has everything to do with that book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, coming out in, like, what, the early 80s or something? And so now everybody just assumes that, you know, Venus is the chalice, and Mars is the rod.
Yeah, and it's not like there's no connection to older ideas in some ways, because, like, even the name Venus, like, we're talking about the...
Rhymes with penis.
Nope. Well, there's that. I was going with the old school, like, what, goddess of beauty kind of thing or whatever.
Right, right.
Anyhow, that's more of an aside that we need to go down just right now, because, again, sponge bath, but...
sure.
Just throw that out there, that Mercury can be sexy, the moon can be sexy, and, you know, there's a lot more going on than just Mars and Venus when it comes to attraction and relation and stuff like that.
Sure.
Yeah, so having just said all the bullshit I just said, Venus is usually interpreted to be the part of us that does want to relate to and form sort of cooperative partnerships with other people, and that is broader category partnership, not just romance, you know?
Right.
At the same time, it's like, okay, relation, connection, implication of... harmonious connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other face of Venus is that of our ability to appreciate harmony in nature, harmony in art, harmony in things other than just interpersonal connections.
I love that. Okay.
Next, we have Jupiter. Jupiter is another one that's interesting to me just because on the one hand, it's easy to think about it as the part of us that both wants to expand into new horizons and try new things and be bigger than or more than we already are. And also, as far as flavors of mind space, Jupiter is like also the confidence that allows us to do these things. Because, you know, there are other psychological motivators that might make us grow and try new things that don't feel that great, but Jupiter is the one that does make us feel good about it.
Okay, tell us about Big Bad Saturn. Big Bad Saturn Daddy.
Yep. So I was looking at my memories on Facebook, and I was blessed with this content today. It is a picture of Bernie Sanders from the I Am Once Again Asking You to, you know, meme.
Yes.
And it's got a Saturn over his face, and the top caption is, "Therapist, Bernie Saturns doesn't exist. He can't make you do anything." And then the caption on the bottom is, "I am once again asking you for you to get your shit together." So yes,
that's a good one. Yeah, it's all that's all Saturn wants for any of us, just for all of us to get our shit together.
Yep. Yeah. So. Even, I mean, that's a good pairing between Jupiter and Saturn, because it's like everything we just said about Jupiter, it sounds like Jupiter wants us to be better, to be more, da-da-da-da-da. Saturn does too, but it is a very different mind space and, like, very different set of experiences associated with it. Like, Saturn can make us aware of all of the things we currently lack, all of the boxes that have not yet been checked off, and
mm-hmm.
how many more steps are ahead of us if we're going to climb to the top of this big-ass mountain.
So it's Jupiter, but spicy.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So kind of psychologizing that a little bit more, Saturn relates to our ability to engage in self-discipline. Like, if we're thinking about the tarot specifically, like, you probably have some tarot stuff going on, right, in your brain over there?
Kind of. I mean, well, I think Saturn, just based on the, like, brief description that I have of it now, would probably be something like the Emperor or... like the Chariot, even, where it's like discipline and hard work that gets you there, or, you know, structure or like hierarchy, that kind of thing.
Interesting. That's very interesting. All of the things that you were saying absolutely line up with Saturn, and the flavors of Saturn, like self-discipline, having a plan, being cautious and not leaving things to chance. Whereas on the Jupiter side of things, it's like, oh, what's the worst that could happen? And maybe that is exactly the kind of experience one might have if you were following your Jupiter, or responding to a Jupiter transit. Whereas with Saturn, it would kind of be the opposite, like the Murphy's Law kind of effect. Like, oh no, if there is room for things to go wrong, they probably will go wrong, that kind of thing. That's interesting. And I don't actually know that much about the connections with the tarot, but I've always seen it related to the devil. And partially because Saturn is the chains we willingly choose to wear. It's our shouldering of our responsibilities that are our responsibilities.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, that makes total sense.
So that's the traditional cast of the planets so far. And I say that because, you know, back in the day, those were what were visible to people. Though some have argued, including the teacher I mentioned earlier, that even Uranus on a good, clear night to the trained eye, knowing exactly where to look, you could see that thing way out there. And also, asterisk side note, yes, people say Uranus, Uranus, Uranus. Everybody says everything. Everybody says that one a little bit differently.
I like it. How did you say that? Uranus?
Uranus, yeah.
Uranus. I like that. I've never heard that before, actually.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Going back real quick to the tarot thing, I think there's probably going to be people who are just as, like, strict and well-practiced on the meanings of tarot cards and whatnot as there are, you know, people who, you know, they eat, sleep, and breathe the zodiac. So they're a lot more familiar with meanings and these associations or whatever. But I like to believe that they can be somewhat subjective for whoever, you know, that it's part of what I love about the tarot so much is that it's kind of up to your interpretation. And there are books upon books upon books that all have different definitions or, you know, things that they associate with different cards. And tarot decks are so wide and varied anyways that it's hard to say. You know, I mean, obviously you and I were talking about the Rider-Waite deck, which is the classic deck that everybody knows. Mm-hmm. But yeah, because I was just out of curiosity, was looking at other cards that that Saturn is associated with, and the World was mentioned too. Card.
Yeah.
So where it's like, yes, technically it symbolizes achievement and you know, having like the completion of a journey or whatever, but with the it suggests like boundaries and having limitations and that kind of thing too. So I think it's fun to look at that sort of intersectionality between these systems, because eventually I'm going to talk a little bit about numerology and how that kind of ties into the zodiac and different meanings and whatnot too. So, but to me, it's all very subjective. So
absolutely. You know. Yeah. Thank you for highlighting that. That's A, brilliant, B, useful, and C, it speaks to the dimensionality of like the zodiac as the spectra of experiences. Because yeah, everything that you were just saying right there is totally a part of the Saturn tool bag or like Saturn atmosphere. Whether or not it is the toiling flavor of climbing the mountain and all of that, or the sense of achievement once one has gotten to the top, there interrelated and still kind of connected to that whole Saturn experience and process.
Right. So just, I guess that was my little interjection. We can talk about, you know, Neptune and
Uranus.
Uranus.
Yeah. I'm probably going to give these ones just a little bit of short shrifts, just because, as I either mentioned before or am just mentioning now and will continue to mention over and over until we're all fucking sick of hearing it, my mind was pretty blown when I started looking at and taking seriously the ancient rulerships, like the old caste that we were just talking about, because people didn't generally see these outer planets back in the day. And the way that those planets related to the signs and the older ways of looking at things is really useful. That's all I'll say for now. The other side of it is that these new planets are so new that, like, when you think about it, the meanings that people have gravitated towards ascribing to each of them, these are pretty new ideas and might be subject to change in just a couple centuries. Who knows? Maybe even less than that at the rate that things change these days.
I have noticed that like when you're reading your birth chart or even just like in the couple of astrology books that I have cracked open in the last decade, that The last three planets, like all the way up until Saturn, or until Neptune, I guess, technically, you get these really deep, thorough dives into what each planet represents, how it can affect you, or how it, you know, relates to you and your birth chart, that kind of thing. And then as soon as you get to those later planets, it's like, it sort of has something to do with this. Anyway, here's where it's at.
Okay, that's vindicating me here. I mean, just today I was looking through some stuff and I'm like, damn, people have a really hard time, like, really nailing down between Neptune, Uranus, and Pluto, which one has these flavors versus those flavors, and interesting. So yeah. I'm glad that's not only me who's seeing that.
Well, I mean, not only were we not able to observe them, but when we did, were able to observe them, like, they take so long, that energy that they're producing is taking such a long time to reach us or reach, you know, into our realm of things, that it's not, whatever they're relating to is harder to observe than, say, Mercury, which is, you know, so quick and immediate. So it makes complete sense that there's still some haze over what those planets relate to.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that being said, let's talk about Neptune.
Neptune. In the broadest sense, again, my broadest sense, and that's the shit that I've been aware of, is associated with all the mystical sorts of dimensions of things, like our ability to kind of twist the knob on the psychic radio frequencies and start picking up the vibrations as they're out there. It's like our ability to connect to things beyond ourself. It definitely seems to be characterized in that sort of like magical and mystical way, more so than like a practical, like me sending you a letter or something like that kind of connection.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds awesome. I kind of love Neptune for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Uranus is also interesting because on the one hand, it can be related to or interpreted as our uniqueness and our need to kind of pursue and cultivate what is uniquely us about ourselves, despite social pressures. It's also gotten a lot of connections in recent times with, like, sudden drastic change. And I think a part of that is, like, that intersection between, okay, if there's some unique thing that maybe doesn't fit with what else has been going on or tradition or something like that. Maybe there's something innovative happening, or some, like, it kind of has mutant power about it.
Huh. Interesting.
And then that leaves Pluto, at least for us today. Sorry, asteroid nerds. I lack the qualifications to say shit about the asteroids with any real authority, so I'm just not gonna. But you can look it up yourselves.
Okay. Sure. Google it.
Yes. So Pluto. Pluto, the lord of the underworld. Pluto is often associated with intense transformation. In the broadest sense, it can be connected with a lot of other things, including the sorts of realities and experiences that might make us need to transform. And oftentimes that has this flavor of traumatic experience or really intense emotional anything.
So strictly speaking, before I start guessing then, there are not signs that are associated with the last three.
Ooh.
Right?
There are now. So once the astrologers got their hands on the outer planets, the idea of joint rulership became a thing, where some signs have their traditional planetary ruler and also one of the outer planets.
Oof, okay.
Yeah, I know, it's... It's a lot.
Okay. Well, I know for a fact that Leo is associated with the sun.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yes, because, well, there's the whole center of attention thing. But just bright, radiant, they have manes. they are literal embodiments of the sun quite often. So then Mercury is obviously Gemini.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Venus. Harmony. Love. No, it's not. It's not Cancer. Too moody. it's not Pisces. Taurus?
Ooh, yeah. Ding, ding, ding.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there more than one for Venus? There is?
Yes.
Okay. Venus. Harmony. Libra.
There you go.
Harmony.
There you go.
Libra. Yeah, okay. Yeah, keeping things balanced and harmonious. Yes, Libra. Okay, yeah. I feel like that was a gimme. I should have known that.
I would have laughed at you if you didn't.
okay, so then that leaves Mars, which is Aries.
Yep.
I know that one for sure. Aries. And is that the only one for Mars?
Not by traditional rulership.
Okay. Aries and Virgo?
Think a little scarier.
No? Scorpio?
Yeah.
Scorpio. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And then, so Jupiter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Jupiter. It's not... Capricorn has to be Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so... Sagittarius?
Yes.
Okay. All
That's
right,
one
Sagittarius.
Of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm throwing you, like, right into the fire with this one.
It's okay. Saturn. Oh, okay. Is Virgo Jupiter? No,
that's, and this is where I should have said, with all that mystical sort of stuff, before there was Neptune, Jupiter got a lot of that, and still does kind of have those flavors, so there's a hint for you.
Okay, Sagittarius and, I forgot the moon.
Yeah.
I forgot the moon, which
we can come back to the moon.
I want to do it just because I don't know for sure, but I have a feeling that the moon, that Cancer is associated with the moon.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. Is that the only one for the moon?
Yeah. The sun and the moon only have one sign each.
One. Okay. Yes. Okay. Perfect. Okay. So it's not Cancer. It's not Aries. It's not Taurus. It's not Gemini. Aquarius?
Ooh, that's a good guess.
So it's... Wait, I'm talking about Jupiter, right?
Yep.
So, why did... Okay.
What's got you on that?
Well, because I think the only one left is Pisces.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Pisces?
Mm-hmm.
It is? What? Okay. I don't know why I just assumed Pisces would be one of the later planets, like Neptune.
It is. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Ding, 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 again.
Yeah.
That's where that overlap went with Neptune's kind of mystical flavor being originally Jupiter's kind of domain.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So that was your hint, your clue. So Saturn would be Capricorn.
Mm-hmm.
Capricorn and Virgo? Where the fuck is Virgo?
Oh, all right. So here's the kicker. With Saturn, it is like this interesting dichotomy because on the one hand, you've got boring old traditional Capricorn. But the other side of the traditional rulership was Aquarius, believe it or not.
Oh, okay. Wow, okay. So Capricorn and Aquarius. That makes sense now. Because my husband is an Aquarius, and he's very, as we've talked about in the past, he's very
Saturnian. Yes. Jinx.
Yeah. Jupiter. Okay, so then Neptune, we said, was Pisces.
Mm-hmm.
Uranus. So these are ones that have, like, double. Would it be Taurus?
Ooh, what makes you say that?
I don't know. I guess just mostly kind of proximity to Pisces.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, poor Taurus, spoiler, has not gotten an outer planet's rulership yet. And I say that just because there's still other bodies out there that might be hiding. This is a big ass one, according to some astronomers. And, you know, the asteroid people sometimes want to give a secondary rulership with an asteroid to some of the other signs.
So it's not Taurus.
Not Taurus.
Uranus. Is it? Well, I said Aquarius, didn't I?
Oh, did you say that for Uranus?
Yeah, well, because we talked about the, like, flip between Aquarius being for Jupiter and, yes, right? And then...
Saturn, yeah.
Saturn, and, wait, so it's Saturn and?
Yeah, Saturn and Uranus, okay. There you go.
Yes. Wow. See, this is why I need it in front of me. So, like I need a little match game or something in front of me so that I know what we've already talked about.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And Pluto. It has to be cold, distant, like a rock Virgo.
Okay, so we Gemini folk share Mercury with those Virgo folk.
Damn it.
Yeah.
It's nothing personal. Everybody has, you know, their signs ranked, and so do I. Let's just leave it at that.
It'll make more sense later once, it'll make more sense later, but...
Okay.
Yeah,
so Pluto, then what's with Pluto?
Pluto is Scorpio's modern rulership.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. I love that. To be honest. I was just being catty with Virgo. So, moving on from the planets, there are other things that appear in a birth chart that are the main elements of your, you know, astrological personality. So walk us through the next part, the signs, I suppose. Let's talk about the signs.
So, the signs and the rest of the stuff. Luckily, it's all interconnected, as you so aptly pointed out earlier, so this isn't going to be, like, totally different textbook. This is still the same chapter, even. Just a different paragraph.
Okay.
So, the signs, each being related to one of the planets, have the flavors of those planets. And then a little extra, like, just as we start to try to fit all of these things together, we are taking our first step by saying, planets go in signs. So you've got Mars in Virgo, Sun in Gemini, Saturn in Aquarius, whatever the case might be. One of the ways that I like to think about this, and this is how my teacher and most of my teachers have influenced me to think about it, is you've got planets representing psychological urges or needs, so a what of some sort, if we're thinking about the parts of our mind. And each of our what's are in different signs, or sometimes you've got a bunch in one sign, and the sign is kind of like the how and why that particular psychological urge is doing what it's doing in our lives, in our minds. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. So you can say, I 100% always cry at PETA commercials where Sarah McLachlan is singing Eyes of an Angel softly because my, you know, such and such was born in cancer or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And for all intents and purposes, let's use the sun because it's nice and easy with some of this stuff. So the sun in any given sign, you've got the sun being our need to both feel vitalized and energized and also radiate that energy out into the world. The sign that your sun is in is kind of like the how that you're doing that. So maybe it is crying at the PETA commercials. Maybe it's going out on wow. What do people do? Good Lord.
I know, right?
I'm going to blame this all on... Oh, go ahead.
On COVID?
Yep.
We're going to be blaming things on COVID for a long, long time to come, so.
That's fair.
Yeah, but do you know what the most popular sun sign among serial killers is?
Oh, shit, is it Taurus?
Nope.
Damn it, what is it?
Cancer.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I was going to say, we can fact check it, but I'm almost sure I just read somewhere in my research this past week that cancer is the most common sun sign among serial killers. There's also a lot of Gemini. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, and I think the other one may have been, it's not Virgo, I think it might have been Capricorn, actually, so. Yeah.
I feel like this one is going to have to merit a follow-up post just because, I mean, I've seen different things at different times, and I've seen different ways of, like, categorizing serial killers based on their astrological composition in ways that weren't just sun sign based. So it'd be really interesting to kind of compare and contrast some of these groupings.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. You know, especially when we're talking about fascinating topics like true crime, which we both know I love. So.
Yes, indeed.
Anywho, back to the signs and how we read them and interpret them.
So trying to keep it, again, fairly short since we'll go into more elaborate profiles of each of the signs as we progress through the rest of the year. The big takeaway I would really try to get out there for us at this point is just that the signs are like this set of traits and tendencies, dispositions, and they all can be seen as having particular virtues that they're capable of, like, cultivating, you know? We can think about some of that with just, like, the traits themselves associated with each sign, like Capricorn being hardworking or Gemini being quick-witted or whatever like that.
Oh, I'm glad you went with quick-witted and not two-faced.
Yeah, there might be a little bit of pro-Gemini bias in this, just saying. For me, it was a really insightful or just interesting moment of changing my thinking about that kind of stuff and those elements of the signs to see that some of those traits can be, rather than just like the virtues in and of themselves, they can be like tools for helping that particular sign to do what it does. And that, like, having a particular planet in a particular sign means that you can be maybe increasing your compassion, increasing your, like, ability to stick to doing what you say you're going to do, maintaining your integrity, becoming a better performer, becoming a better partner, becoming a more caring person, like all the sorts of things that are associated with those different signs. And also, like, the idea that the signs aren't just static categories. They can be developmental. You know, you don't start off having all of the good shit and all the bad shit necessarily either associated with any given sign. Like, you are developing. You're constantly able to keep leveling up your Capricorn meter or your Gemini meter or whatever it is.
Sure. Yeah. That makes sense. We'll have to come up with some sort of, like, visual metaphor for what that looks like, because, I don't know, the way I am, like, sort of picturing it myself is, like, you know, for me to say I was, you know, I am a Gemini, and it comes with, you know, 16 different buckets, and, you know, 8 of them are good traits and 8 of them are bad traits, but my experiences are going to fill those buckets, and some may get full faster than others, and some may not have anything in them at all.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
You know. So this is where we're going to pause and take a little break in our discussion about the elements of astrology. In the next episode, we'll pick back up and talk about the last 2 or 3 remaining elements that sort of comprise the full picture of your birth chart. And these are kind of like the fixins, right? These are like the seasonings, the salt and pepper on the turkey of your being.
Or tofurkey if you're that kind of person.
Or turducken if you're that kind of person. Yes. So we did. I did have the pleasure of receiving some inquiries based on our last episode from a listener that I thought were really interesting. I was sort of able to answer some of these questions on my own, or at least direct some information their way, but I thought the questions were, like, unique and pertinent enough to actually try and have a little discussion with you about them. So they kind of center around the same theme. So the first question that I got is, am I under the influence of my mom's signs when I'm in utero? And the sort of adjoining question, like the follow-up question after that, is if my mom has significant influence over my physical development in utero, then we also consider her signs in our snapshot set of birth signs, correct? So what do you think?
These are great questions. In terms of in utero effects. I don't think I've seen anything that really fleshes out what might be going on or might not be going on with your mother and you. That said, there are some interesting ways of looking at one's charts that are meant to try to identify what your experience might have been like in utero, and transitioning from that state into your own individual existence. I believe the term is perinatal. Some astrologers and psychedelic therapists who are into astrology in particular, like that intersection point, will try to look at your chart to interpret what your experience might have been like when you were in the womb and leaving the womb, and how that might play into the sorts of traumas that affect your psyche, because, you know, birth ain't no walk in the park.
Yes, okay. So, that being said, that's not to say that your experiences once you are born cannot be molded or, like, shaped in some way by your parents. So, just as a reminder, we are always down to answer questions or discuss them to the best of our ability. It's a fun, fascinating facet. Did you like that? Fun, fascinating facet.
I did. I enjoyed that very much.
To this, you know, medium, the podcast medium, to be able to answer questions and interact with listeners like this, so keep them coming. We're here for it.
Yes.
The Gemini Podcast is written and researched by both me and Alice. All of our sound production and editing is done by Alice Alistair, and all of our music, including our theme, comes from Uncertainty, Alice's one-of-a-kind solo act. Alice is also available for personalized natal chart readings. To learn more about availability and rates, reach out to us at thegemandipodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and stay curious, stargazers.